weeks after the nationwide chaos that resulted from the administration's first Muslim ban, the president has signed an executive order that surrogates have described as just like the first one. How is it similar? Are there important differences? I'm grateful to be joined right now by Jonathan Smith, legal director at the outstanding nonprofit Muslim Advocates. Jonathan, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Right up front, what do listeners need to know about the new executive order?
Unlike in the first version, legal permanent residents or green card holders are explicitly excluded from the travel restriction in the order. Similarly, there is a 10-day grace period for this order. So unlike last time where the terms went into effect immediately and there were people who were literally on airplanes or in airports who were turned away, in this order, although the order was signed on Monday, March 6th, it actually will not go into effect until 10 days later on March 16th. And the goal is to kind of make sure that you don't have people kind of caught in limbo. And so there are these changes. And from a legal perspective, these changes are generally thought of as kind of due process changes, right? They're changes to kind of make sure that all the people who are impacted by the terms of the order have the correct and appropriate notice and legal process. However, for all those changes, you know, there's a lot that's not changed. There still is a bar of entry for six countries, all majority Muslim countries. And we know that President Trump, from the days that he was a candidate on the trail, has a long history and record of anti-Muslim rhetoric and bias and discrimination. And that discriminatory conduct and statement is still a key part of this order. And that was a key reason why many of the courts put the first order on hold. And nothing that they've done to change the second order cures the discrimination and the bias that is so clearly infects this new document.
Jonathan, as you good people at Muslim Advocates sit around and pore over this document, what are the biggest concerns that Muslim Advocates have about this new directive?
There is this history of discrimination that we see from the president and from his senior advisors, and nothing about this document makes us believe that that discrimination and bigotry that underlies the first document has gone away. In many ways, we know that they've kind of doubled down on that discrimination, and despite the fact that many courts raise questions about that, they are nevertheless still going ahead with these majority Muslim countries, and that is extremely problematic. You know, in addition to the travel restrictions for these six countries, which, you know, obviously are a very big deal for people who are from those countries or who are relatives in those countries, or for many American Muslims who may want to travel to those countries or have religious leaders come from those countries, particularly as we approach some important holidays later on in the year, there are other parts of the order that we believe are maybe laying the groundwork for a registry, which is something that Mr. Trump talked a lot about as a candidate. There's also parts of this new order where they talk about things like quote-unquote honor killings, which are kind of code words for kind of deep-seated stereotypes about Islam and about the Muslim community. And once again, we see the use of those types of terms and that type of language as evidence that the real purpose behind this order is not about national security. The real purpose behind this order is discrimination against the American Muslim and broader Muslim community, and that is obviously something that should be of great concern to all people of faith and all people of good conscience, both here in the United States and more broadly around the world.
Do you think that some people are overreacting to the way the administration is handling this issue? That I ask that question because that seems to be the message from the press secretary and other surrogates.
Part of their tactic is to say, there's nothing to see here, everyone. Look, this new order is good. We fixed all the problems. This is just about national security. No need to pay attention here. And I think if we kind of buy into that narrative, if we kind of take what the press secretary and other people are saying and kind of turn our attention to other things, we will allow this administration to continue its outright discrimination and bigotry against an entire faith and community. And so No, I don't think people are overreacting. I think that there are real concerns about this border, and the same reasons that led people to protest and to rally the first time around are still evident in this new order at this point.
What is the role of Muslim advocates in a situation like this?
We are a legal organization. We also are an organization that has strong connections and ties with the broader American Muslim community. And so we are kind of moving right now on multiple fronts. The day after the order went into effect on Tuesday, March 7th, we had a call with community members of the broader American Muslim community where we were able to educate them about some of the very issues that we're talking about right now and let them know how this new order may impact their rights. We also have prepared public education materials that are available on our website that also provide some of that information, and we are making sure that those materials are broadly available to the public. We get calls and emails all the time from people who want to know, can I travel? You know, can my relatives come and visit me? We're about to have a baby. You know, there are real questions that people have and real uncertainty that people have. The other thing I would add is that in addition to the terms of the document and the order, we saw the last time it went into effect that there was massive profiling and surveillance of U.S. citizens who are Muslim or who are perceived to be Muslim, as well as green card holders and other visa holders. And so we are concerned, and what we hear from the Florida community is real concern that if I go to one of these countries, or even if I just go to not one of these six countries, will I be stopped by federal agents? Will I be detained? Will I be harassed? And those are real concerns that people have based on what happened last time. And so one of the things that we did a few days after the revised order was issued, we at Muslim Advocates, along with another civil rights organization, actually sent a Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA request, to the Department of Homeland Security and to the Customs and Border Patrol agency to find out exactly what they're doing, what policies they have in place, what steps they're taking to make sure that this profiling and harassment of individuals is not happening this time around. We also are considering, just like many of the other organizations, the ACLU and many others, if there are other legal actions and steps we can take to kind of combat this order. But one thing is clear from our position at Muslim Advocates, we are going to do all that we can do within the law and within our means to fight back against this blatant discrimination and bigotry by the Trump administration.
Talk for a minute, if you will, about the concerns you're hearing from Muslim Americans and their reaction to these policies.
First of all, we know that there's massive concern and worry in the broader American Muslim community because of the outright discriminatory and bigoted statements and actions that this president and his administration continue to take. And that has real impacts on people. It makes people afraid. It makes them concerned. It makes them question their place and legitimacy in this country, which is simply disgraceful and should not be coming from anybody, but certainly not be coming from the president of our country, who has the obligation to protect all people and look out for the rights of all people. But the other thing that I think we've been seeing, and this is actually something we've been seeing for quite some time, is that there's been an increase of hate crimes, of acts of violence, either directed towards individuals who are perceived to be Muslim, as well as to houses of worship, so mosques and other places, that is certainly on the rise. And there's, in my mind, a clear connection between the conduct and the actions and the words of the president and his aides and the rise in hate crimes. Because when we all know that when you hear the leader of our country kind of so easily trafficking in such bigoted language, that gives other people a license to do the same and to act the same. And so there's, again, there's not just concerns kind of about what the federal government is going to do, but now there's real concerns about what's going to happen kind of as you're walking your kids to school or as you're going to your mosque to pray. I think that there are real concerns. Can I live my life as an American Muslim or as a person perceived to be Muslim? You know, we all heard just a few days ago of the horrific incident of a Sikh individual who was attacked in the state of Washington. you know, so there are real concerns, more broadly speaking. And I would also say, too, you know, we've also seen a rise, unfortunately, in attacks on Jewish cemeteries or Jewish community centers. And in my mind, these are all connected, right? Because once you make it okay to hate one group of people, it then becomes okay for some people to hate multiple groups of people. And so the concerns that I have and that we have at Muslim Advocates about this rise in hate crimes isn't just limited to the American Muslim community. It's really more broadly to communities of faith generally, and really to the broader American public, to anyone who could ever be attacked because of who they are or what they believe or where they come from.
Jonathan Smith is legal director at Muslim Advocates, working on the front lines of civil rights to guarantee freedom and justice for Americans of all faiths. Jonathan, thank you for all of the work of this organization, and thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you for having me.